Hello and welcome to Cap Talks by Synthase. This podcast connects life sciences challenges with computer-aided biology solutions by talking to the thought leaders and experts in diverse fields. My name is Dr. Fane Mensa, and I'm the Life Sciences Business Director at Synthase and host of Cap Talks by Synthase podcast. You can find all our past episodes at synthase.com/CapTalksbySynthase. And don't forget to subscribe to us on all major platforms to get the latest insights and information from Synthase.
Welcome to another episode of Cap Talks by Synthase. And today I'm joined by the lovely Emily Fritsch, who's a principal scientist at Syngenta. Emily, thank you for joining the podcast. How are you today?
Yeah, very good. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Really excited to have you here because for various reasons, we know each other well. You've been in the industry for quite a long time. You have tons of experiences. But what I was really interested in today's podcast is to really hear more about your journey across automation, digitalization. So maybe perhaps you can start a little bit about introducing yourself. Where did you start? How did you pick things up? Just to set the scene.
Yeah, absolutely. So actually my background isn't automation. My background is molecular biology and yeast genetics. So this is what I did my PhD in France. You can probably hear it from my accent. I am French. So I did my PhD there and then did a postdoc in Germany also about yeast genetics. After that worked as my first job in industry. At the end of my postdoc, it was quite clear for me that I didn't want to pursue an academic career. I actually wanted to move on to more industrial context and more applied research as well. So I've moved back to France and worked as, my role was twofold. I worked as a strain engineer, working with yeast again and being able to apply all I had learned, but this time to produce biofuel. And also one part was more bioinformatics and we were doing a lot of whole genome sequencing, and we needed someone who would set up the analysis pipeline. The thing was that I had been away from France for a long time. So my postdoc was quite long. It was 5 years and a half. And I kind of wanted to go back to a more international environment. So I looked for other options, found a job in the north of the UK in a company called Invista, which is a chemical producing company, which at the time had a small group, which was a biotechnology group. And I was hired as a strain engineer, but this time working with bacteria. But I was really lucky because when I joined there, they were in the process of automating and they were looking for someone who would actually be in charge of the automation platform, install it in-house, develop the protocols. And I thought that was a great challenge. I was really interested in it and I became that person. So I worked there for 3 years, really enjoyed it. Unfortunately, the company's vision changed over time. And they decided to close the biotechnology group. So I looked for another opportunity, which led me to Synthase. As you know, this is where we've met each other.
Yeah, we'll get to Synthase in a bit. But interesting to hear that you kind of felt or stepped into this automation role up north. I want to flash forward later on, but I want to focus on that period where you first came into automation. If you look at the people around you, the support, let's say also the hardware, software that was around that time, how was it for you to take up something which is quite new for you?
To be honest, I was a bit thrown into the deep end because I was the only one working with the robot. Even when it was installed, I was the only one who would actually develop things. So I had to learn how to actually use the hardware, to use the software that went with it. And I must say, at the time we were working very closely. The platform was from Analytic Jena, and we're working really closely with SciBio, and they really helped me. So they had some fantastic application scientists who really helped me, even though they were based in London and I was way up north. They were very friendly and really helped me, but a lot of it I had to just do a bit of trial and error and test it and learned it myself, and also kind of go through some mistakes as well and realize, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done this way, or maybe there is a better way to do this, and sort of learn also, because it's a kind of a slightly different mindset to go from manual to automation. You have to think about things slightly differently. There was a journey, but there were frustrating days. I'm not going to lie. Days where you're like, oh, I just want to throw that robot out of the window. Luckily it's big, so you couldn't. But also a lot of, yeah, very gratifying days as well, where you finally manage and you get strains out and you realize that people also around you are like, oh, that sounds like a really interesting technology. I would like to try. And yeah, these are, I mean, they definitely compensate for all the frustrations, I feel, these type of days where things are really working and you see that you've made a lot of progress.
Yeah, no, that's really important. It's fascinating that you mentioned field application scientists that were instrumental for you in the early stages. And that's actually a role that you then ran into same days. So how was it from engaging with those people, them teaching you, to you now joining Synthase, becoming a field application scientist? Was there some inspiration that you had from the people at Analytigena?
I mean, I definitely wanted to be able to do as good a job as they did, because they were really there to help me. And I asked them a lot of questions. And that meant when I joined Synthase, I wanted to make sure that whoever were, and I'm going to put quotes because obviously they're not mine exactly, but my customer, let's say the people I work with from different companies, that I would be able to support them in the same way. And I just really wanted to make a good job and make sure that they'll be pleased with the outcome, but that also they would feel supported, because I can understand that when you by yourself and you have to learn all the technology and the software and the hardware and also the biology that sometimes doesn't work exactly as you want, it can be really tough, and it's good to feel supported as well. So that was one of my aspirations, definitely. Awesome. And also generally, I mean, Synthase is a product that is meant to help people, which is also one of the things that attracted me, obviously, because I had been on the other side where I had to script everything. I had to learn all the language, think of all the errors, consider all the different steps and write at the very low level. So joining a company, the vision of the company, which was making things easier for biologists and being able to transfer that knowledge to people who are actually in the lab, really resonated with me, because I thought, I've seen the other side. Anything that can make it better, I want to be part of that, really. So it was definitely an exciting journey.
So, Emily, I was just realizing, we've done a couple of podcasts, and we always speak to people who've got different roles, different industries and environment. And I realized that it's quite important to also highlight a little bit the types of roles that we always talk about. And you mentioned field application scientists. So I thought for the listeners, could you briefly explain what that role entitles and what your experiences was at Synthase?
Yeah, so I think I must mention also that field application scientist at Synthase is probably a bit different than field application scientist in other places. It depends a bit of the industry that you are a field application scientist for. But Synthase, because it's a software which is meant for biologists, what happens is that when people get access to the software, it's a software that does very complicated things for users, right? So there is a learning curve, and they need support, usually support for training, but also generally support when things don't go well or when they don't understand something. So you need to be there for them to help them with whatever they need, and also help them with deployment, which means going from the software to the actual labware and making sure that, and hardware really, and making sure that everything connects and works together. And then to a certain extent, because in this case we're talking automation for biological processes, there is the whole uncertainty around biology and making sure that actually things work robustly and being able to troubleshoot with the customer is really important, because very often what they will do is think, the biology doesn't work, it's probably the robot's fault. And very often it isn't, right? There might be something more in the background. So we do also, as a field application scientist, at least at Synthase, you do a lot of troubleshooting to make sure that everything works the best and that people feel confident using their hardware, the software, and run the experiments on the robots.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you for that, Emily. That's good to have. I want to just jump back on that. Feeling confident and the science and the biology. You gave an example earlier that you were in a specific role where you had to adapt this technology for the purpose of the science and the work that you're doing. How was that for you, implementing a technology in various amounts of places where perhaps you had some resistance, perhaps people had different expectations? Can you tell us a little more about that process?
Yeah, of course. And I think, again, this will depend on the places where you work, but generally you can always consider that if you have a number of users, they tend to fall into three categories. You will have the very early adopters who are all for it, want to try everything, want to test everything really quickly. You have the ones who are, they're not against it, but they kind of want to see how it goes first and then jump on board. And then you have a few who resist a little bit the idea. And I think that's perfectly natural. And to be honest, to a certain extent, having also that group of a bit more skeptical people sometimes is also a good thing, because it really pushes you to show actually with data that, yes, this is working. Yes, this is a good approach. So it does make you grow. But I would say one thing that is quite important is, depending on what stage you're at into your implementation, you need to choose the right people that you're talking to, basically. So as you want to target initially the people who are very keen to test it, rather than try to bring everybody on board in one go, because I think that's just way too time consuming. And then you end up with the very early adopters being frustrated because it doesn't go fast enough. Yeah. And then the one resistant, like they're being pushed maybe a bit too quickly. So sort of having phases where you progressively develop the skill set within your team and also start implementing more and more is quite crucial. So don't go from 0 to 100%. In my experience, going by stepwise is kind of a better option.
Absolutely. Well, we'll talk a little bit about your current role, because that's, I think you're already implemented a little bit of what you're currently doing at Syngenta. But back to your field application scientist period. I think you mentioned a really important point around the different groups of people that you identify. From a vendor perspective, how do you deal with those three different people? I think they need a different touch. Do they need a different way of working? How do you deal with the, let's say, the person that's really excited and wants to take things on versus the one who's very, very, how do I say that, resistant and need to prove it to them?
Yeah, I think you do need to communicate differently, because you don't want to scare the more resistant off, but you need to be, you also sometimes need to maybe slow down a bit the people who want the very early adopters, because they're so enthusiastic. They want everything in one go, right? They're like, oh, let's have a look at this and let's have a look at that. And sometimes you have to also structure a little bit. So you need to feed their enthusiasm, because it's amazing that they're enthusiastic. And yes, you want that, but sort of structure it a little bit more. While the people who are a bit more resistant, I think you need to hold their hands maybe a bit longer. You sort of need to show them that it can be done. You sometimes, I mean, you've mentioned, yeah, we'll go through my role in a bit more detail, but sometimes spending time in the lab with the people is also quite important as well, and making sure that they feel like they're supported if something doesn't go well. So it's sort of a reassurance as well. So it's making sure that you support everybody, but they will also need different levels. So for instance, the very early adopters, they're very likely to, they understand it quickly usually, or they will go the extra mile to make sure that they're on top of things, that they understand how it works, that they've tried this and they've tried that. So making sure that you're there to answer their questions is really important. And then I think as you can benefit also from that group, because as they start, especially in an organization, as they start having successes with the technology, they progressively bring anyway the rest of the users with them, because people start saying, huh, that's pretty good, I want to do that too. And then they start being also, if you've anyway been there to support them, they start being on board a bit more, and then usually they get converted as well, usually.
Awesome. I might put you on the spot a little bit, but was there a moment where you had that eureka moment where you were engaging with someone who was very resistant and you applied what you just discussed and you felt like, oh, wow, I convinced someone of a technology and they're now benefiting from it?
Yeah, there is one example. So I won't say from from which company, but there is one example of someone who was quite resistant. I wouldn't necessarily say resistant, but very skeptical, let's say. So really not sure that that was the right technology, or that it was better than manual, or even really seeing the value. And then I remember this one day, so we yeah, we work very closely together and we sort of develop things together. And then one day I actually got a message saying, hey, I've run this by myself. I was like,
wow.
That's it. It was a great day because I felt, that person felt confident enough to go into the lab, decide to run it by themselves without having to ask me first. And yeah, it was a fantastic feeling. And also for them, I suppose, as well, because they realized that, yeah, they could do it. And yes, it was beneficial. And they didn't need support anymore. They had reached a point where they would be able to run things by themselves. So yeah, it was a great day, good feeling.
Yeah, awesome. I think this is a really important thing as well. It's like in our day-to-day jobs, it's important that we get rewarded and that we feel rewarded and that what we do has an impact or value. So I think in career-wise, that's really important. And that brings me on to the next point, because you need to be confident for what you do. You need to feel challenged. You need to be rewarded. And sometimes that means a career switch, or that means jumping jobs. And that's exactly what you did. You went from Synthase into Syngenta.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit more about what the reasoning was behind that? And tell us a little bit more about what you saw as a fulfillment, in the sense of, I'd love to do more of this, or this is something that really attracts me.
Yeah, no, of course. So as good as my time at Synthase was, it was obviously working on developing the technology rather than using it, which was great. I learned a lot. I worked with great people from multiple different backgrounds. I had never worked, for instance, with software engineers before, and I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the different points of view and so on. But one thing that was really missing was sort of the lab aspect. Which is always something that I just enjoy being in the lab and doing things with the robot and testing things and troubleshooting. And I could do some of it at Synthase, but what I always felt is, because I was working with all these customers, and once things were working, they don't tell you what they do anymore, which is fair enough, right? And that means mission accomplished, which is great. But I was kind of missing that. I wanted to be part of something where I would be part of the project, but then also know what was the outcome and how it was used and potentially go through iterations, and which is why I decided to switch. And that's how I joined Syngenta, because they were looking for someone to join their automation team, and especially someone who would have experience with automation and digitalization. And yeah, I was lucky that it was a good fit for me, but also for them. And I've been there a year now.
Awesome. A year full of experiences. And you're a Synthase user, which is great. But more so of that, and I think this is a point that we discussed in, I think with Bob, we talked about various solutions and finding a way to get your science or your biology done with the use of several tools, hardware, software. How is that process now? Because first it was just Synthase. Now it's Tekkens, Hamiltons, dispensers, other pieces of software next to Synthase. How is that experience to work with so many different types of solutions?
I actually really enjoy it. I like the diversity of it. But I must say, I think that's one of the key learnings also from automation, is there's not one solution that fits all. I think that's just not a thing, not at least not at the moment. So you have to consider what is the best solution for what you want to do. And not necessarily, very often, I think what people do is they buy one robot. Very often what they do, they buy one really big one that does a lot of different things. And then the problem is that they don't necessarily, everything is sort of almost too complex, even for things that should be quite simple. So thinking of what your problem is, what you're trying to automate, and what the solution is, and in some cases is really crucial. So I would say in some cases, yes, a Tekken, and we have one. We have actually multiple at Syngenta, and we love our Tekkens. Don't get me wrong; they do fantastic jobs. But there are also small dispensers that can be useful, because when you think about it, sometimes you don't need the capability of a moving arm, or you don't need all the fancy liquid handling. You can actually do just dispensing, and that will do the trick, especially for assay development, for instance. That's a good option as well. And similarly, in terms of software, for us, Synthase is a big part of what we do, but it's definitely not the only software that we work with. We do, for certain things, work still with Evilware. We do also have integrations with other pieces of software for things like ELNs and also LIMS system and so on. So I think it's finding not one solution for everything, but finding all the different components that make the solution, if you see what I mean.
Yeah. So we've got all these various different solutions. Then you've got people that are doing manual science, and then you come in, because I think majority of your role is automating processes.
Yes.
For people doing something still manual. How do you go about, do you sit someone down and ask them about their science, and then you start building something? Can you tell us a little bit more about that process?
I mean, that's exactly what we do. Most of the projects, we sit down, we try to understand what they're trying to achieve, what is the goal, what is the throughput, what are the deadlines, so all sort of as much detail as possible, whether they've tested it already manually or not, because that's a big, that's an important one. If nothing has been tested yet, and if you don't have preliminary data, sometimes it can be a bit of a rabbit hole to try to automate something. So knowing all the prior knowledge, and then from there, we propose solutions. So sometimes it's very easy. There's just one solution and it's a quick fix. And we're like, okay, we'll just do this. And in some cases, depending on, for more complex projects, we sit down with them and say, okay, we'll do a proof of concept first, because we first need to make sure that the technology will be working with the challenges associated with what the biological process that you want to work on. And then from there, we'll increase the throughput, or we'll do things slightly differently, or we start doing development. So it's I really enjoyed it because it's very dynamic, but also there isn't there are no two projects that are similar in a way, because especially we on the R&D side, there's so many things that we need to do, which require flexibility and adaptability and development as well, that it's never a boring job.
Yeah. And like going from manual to automated, or to automation are steps, and you take them through that process. But have you also come across moments or experiences where things can't be automated, or you advised against automating things?
It has happened, to be honest. There are certain steps. It wasn't so much that I would go against automation. It's basically the technology that we have in-house, because it's not like we have an endless budget where we can just buy over and over new pieces of kits and new pieces of hardware. There are certain things that, yeah, are limiting because they're just too complex, or the biology, in some cases, a lot of it also has to do with the biology. If the biology is very poorly reproducible already manually, yes, you can automate it to make it more reproducible, but it might also be that biologically you need to reassess what you're doing, because you will never get an answer that is robust enough, which is when, for instance, design of experiment and all these concepts come into play and can be extremely useful. And there again, then you can go back to automation, but initially really understanding your problem and also understanding what the limitations are from your software and your hardware is very important.
Yeah. And if you work with these biologists and scientists just in a general fashion, they get to know new stuff, you train them on things. Do you feel you're taking something away from them? Because they've always been pride on the way they, for example, run experiments manually. Is there a way of balancing that out? And mainly pipetting, right? I think we all aware, we all love, when I was in the lab, I loved pipetting, I had control. Replacing that with automation, or replacing that with a digital tool, could take away some of their skill sets or things they are proud of.
Yeah, so I think it's a perception problem, to be honest. And in that case, it's not so much a technological problem, it's really a people problem, if we want, in the sense that I don't think we're taking anything away. If anything, I think we're empowering users to do a lot more. But you're very right, is especially biologists, for whatever reason, and I must say I can't quite understand why, and I've spoken to a lot of biologists, and I'm still not entirely sure why, they really pride themselves into being good pipettes. And don't get me wrong, very important. I can remember during my PhD being very proud to be able to do qPCRs in 384 well plates, which, actually thinking about it now, is really crazy. And if you can use a robot to do that, that will be the message. But I remember thinking, oh yeah, I'm very good at my job because I know how to pipette well. But actually, if you think about it, that's not at all what a biologist is. They're not good at their job because they know how to pipette. They're good at their job because they're creative. They know how to analyze data. They know how to think of how to design experiments. And that's much more valuable. So I feel like actually I'm not taking anything away from them. Or maybe, yes, I'm taking away part of the pipetting, but that leaves them so much more time to actually do all the things that are much more important, which is designing a new experiment, thinking exactly what does that mean as a result and what can I learn from that result, how can I plan my next experiment, and all these things that usually you just end up not having necessarily the time to do because that time you spent pipetting in the lab. So it is a mindset shift, I would say, and we see it even here at Syngenta. Even though we do have a lot of people using the robots, sometimes you still have to sort of convince people that use the robot. Why are you still doing it manually? But I think people are really realizing quickly once they start using it, they realize the power of it and they want to use it more usually. That's the experience.
Yeah, awesome, thank you. I want to switch gears a little bit. My background is mainly biology and then mainly medicine, looking at humans, looking at finding better ways to treat people. You work at Syngenta, agriculture. It is something similar, but also quite different.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit more about working for a company like Syngenta in this space that we are in, this biopharma, biotech?
So Syngenta is, as you've mentioned, is an agritech, and it's a very big company. We have multiple different sites all over the world. R&D is also on different sites. So, and even though we do have our automation group, interestingly, actually, we have even on-site multiple automation groups because each part of the business have kind of their own as well. So it is very collaborative. That's one of the things that I really enjoy is obviously in my case, I'm in the biologicals R&D group, but ultimately I end up working with people from bioscience. I work with chemists, I can work with formulation, people working with formulation as well. So contrary maybe to smaller groups where people really know each other because they work with each other all the time. I also work with people from Switzerland, from the US. So it has that diversity in terms of whom you talk to. It's very multicultural, but also, it's I don't know if the agritech industry is because I've only worked for Syngenta as an agritech company, but the level of collaboration is really amazing. People are very friendly. They want to work together towards the vision of the company, which is obviously to be able to feed the planet in a more sustainable manner. And people are very motivated to do that and understand that technology is a big part of it and digitalization as well.
Yeah. You touched upon diversity. And you're French, you worked in Germany, you then came to the UK. Even in your day-to-day job, you interact with a lot of different people. I think during your synthesis time, the first introduction with software engineers, but also now with chemists and all these different types of people. I feel like now in biopharma, biotech, you need to have a skill set in which you can engage and communicate with all these people. How has that process been for you?
I've always loved languages. So I learned a few already when I was in high school. I was always happy to, I always liked traveling as well and being able to speak in different languages as well. So for me, it's always been something that I was really attracted to. So I've never found it difficult, but I agree with you that I think we are now in fields where people, especially scientists, need to be good communicators as well. It's that era when people could just work in the lab and come up with the results all by themselves without having to interact with anyone.
Yeah.
That, to me, I feel like that ship has sailed. It's not possible anymore because the challenges are bigger and you therefore need all the skill sets that you can and all the different, the advantage of working in a diverse environment is that people will have had different experiences. They therefore have also different points of views, which means to a specific problem, people will think of different solutions. And I feel like this really brings the best basically out of people rather than if you do it by yourself, you're always a bit more biased towards your way of thinking, which might be the right one in some cases, but actually you could really benefit from others as well contributing, which so to me it's always been something that has been really crucial in the decision, even my career decision. It's been important to not just work at a place where I liked what I was doing as a job, but I liked the people that were within the company and I was working with.
Yeah, and I think I totally agree with you. Like, I've been with Synthes now for 3 years, and diversity is something that if I go out and speak with partners or customers, it is something that comes across. And it's, you're right, it's much easier communicating with them. It's much easier getting them convinced to do something because you've got that easiness and easy way of communication. So I think it's a really, really important aspect of us in the industry, whether you're a biologist, whether you're a chemist, whether you're an automation scientist or engineer. I think communication and being aware of diversity is really important.
Yeah, and we can really learn also, because obviously there's the different cultures, but there's also the different even scientific backgrounds, having people come from different backgrounds. Like I've mentioned, for instance, I was always fascinated to see how software engineers think of a problem versus how a biologist think of a problem.
Really different.
And very different, exactly. And that's not something that I had really necessarily considered until I work with them. But I think it's also made me think slightly differently, because I realized that for certain aspects, they were probably right. And that was actually a good point, is that, you don't have to be, biologists tend to be quite cynical. I think software engineers are clearly less. So sometimes not seeing every problem as, here we go again, it's gonna fail, is kind of a good one, right? So so I feel like I've learned also by talking to people from different backgrounds, different scientific background as well, and generally doing a lot of different jobs, has really shaped also whom I've become now, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And Emily, what I like about you as well is, as I mentioned in the beginning, a lot of experience across, I think, being quite successful in what you're doing throughout your career. But you're also quite active in engaging with students, engaging with people in different companies, communicating what you're doing, hence you're obviously on the podcast. is that something that you feel like you need to give back? Do you think that we as an industry need to be more open towards, let's say, the next generation of scientists, the next generation of biotech leaders? What do you think about outreach and being engaging with people outside of your day-to-day job?
Yeah, to me, I find it very important. I feel it's as important. It's almost like a side job, but it's as important as my current job, because it's not just making sure that people understand automation, it's also maybe the representativity as well. And I must say, for instance, when I was doing my PhD, I don't remember really, and I mean, bear in mind that was a long time ago, but I don't remember seeing seminars about like female automation scientists, for instance, or even just automation in general, hearing about, yes, you can do all these things, but use a robot instead. And I think I kind of missed that. I would have liked I was really lucky in a way, I must say, because through my different career steps, I was able to learn more. I was trusted to do a lot more. And I've always been really grateful for that. But also, I do feel like when I was finishing my PhD and starting my postdoc, if I had learned about all the options that were there, all the different type of jobs, all the different things that you can do, maybe that would have shaped things also slightly differently. And so I want to, I want people to know that these are options, these are real jobs, and this is what they entail as well, and sort of explain that, yes, I'm very passionate about automation and digitalization, but it was also a journey. It's not like I started as an automation scientist. And I think that's the thing as well, is probably if you had told me when I finished my PhD, oh, you know what, in 10 years time, you'll be an automation scientist, I would just have laughed. I'd be like, I have no knowledge about that, clearly not. And then I just evolved, right? And it's not like I needed whatever I've learned at the time needed to be applied right away to become something different. I just, progressively, again, stepwise, sort of evolve and found new interests as well, and became passionate about other things as well, on top of what I was already passionate about. So, so that's kind of what I want to convey, is first of all, representativity. You can be a woman and an automation scientist. It's not a man's job, just because we're working with robots, you know. But also generally, don't believe that just because you've studied something means you don't have access to doing something different. You might just evolve into that role at some point. So give yourself chances as well.
Yeah, it's interesting because we've had quite a few females on the podcast with Keltum, I think episode one, Gintara a couple of episodes ago. And what I find quite interesting is that you've all been very creative in getting your way into the industry. And it's not saying that I think like that's a direct path of getting into automation, because I think, as you mentioned, it's always a left, right, center, up, down. There's always way, but you've been really creative, and I really admire that, because it's not easy, I think, for a woman in an industry where it's very much dominated by men, and everyone thinks like those are the people that run those various different of equipment.
I think it's getting better, to be honest, because there's a lot more representativity, at least for women. So you really realize that this is not, and also I think things are not as I think siloed as they used to be. Nowadays you do see, I mean, there are a lot of postcards, but female leaders as well. And so we're definitely in a much better place in terms of representativity. But I feel like there was a whole generation where somehow there was this preconceived idea that if you were working, let's say, as an engineer, you had to be a man, which also, I don't know where that came from, right? And if you were HR, you had to be a woman. And you think, why couldn't a man do that? So I think it goes both ways as well. It's just that people had this sort of cliche in their heads of what you could be as a specific gender. And I think these are now really being challenged, which is great, because it shouldn't be like that. And there is way more representativity.
Absolutely. And it's like people like you coming on podcasts, going out, showing their faces, showing what's possible that make this happen. So I really, really appreciate that, Emily. And I think we're almost coming to the end, but I wanted to ask you for one favor/question. And this is really around looking forward, looking into what the future holds for the industry. I know you're a big fan of automation and digitalization. What do you see as the next big thing that you really get excited about? And this is really forward thinking.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot, but I think all the concept, and I know this is something that is already starting, but the true concept of lab of the future, where things are really interconnected, it's already a thing, but let's face it, because not everything is at the level where it should be, and that's normal because a lot of these technologies are new technologies and therefore need development. Everything is not perfect, which means you have all these gaps within the end-to-end process, but the concept of having labs where you'll be able to plan your experiment, but then everything is sort of connected. You get all the metadata automatically. You don't have to do all the hard work of copy pasting in files and things like that. That's really the future. And obviously, generally, I think technology is evolving so quickly. I'm pretty sure that if we look back in 10 years time at what Tekan could do now, and what and I'm using again Tekan because that's the one that we have, but it's true for any instrument,
right?
Really. I think if you see that and what it will be able to do, and also how much it's pushed the industry generally to do more biology, to work in a more robust manner, that's really something to look forward to. I think the future is bright, to be honest, for automation and digitalization. But it needs to, I would counterbalance that though by saying that it needs to be done with a clear aim in mind, right? Generating data for the sake of generating data, or automating for the sake of automating, is not that useful. It needs to be a whole environment, an integrated environment where you get value from a biology point of view, from a technical point of view. But in my opinion, I mean, I'm really looking forward to it. I'm excited for the years to come, really.
Awesome. Thank you for that, Emily. It's always a great pleasure speaking to you. But for the people that are not familiar with you, where can they find you on social media to catch up on what you do on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, so you can follow me on LinkedIn. So it's my first name, Emily, and last name, Fritsch. And I work at Syngenta. I think there's there's only one person, so you should be able to find me fairly easily. And I must say also, for everybody who would have questions, feel free to contact me actually and to DM me, because I'm always happy to discuss with people who may want to have an opinion on certain things, but also generally just want to chat. So feel free to contact me.
Awesome. So again, Emily Fritsch, LinkedIn, Syngenta, that's where you can find her. Thank you everyone for listening, and I'm really looking forward to the next episode of Cap Talks, and hope to see you there again.